Hey, Amy Jo. Hi, Natalie. Rana.
Hi, Joanna.
To see everybody. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Simona. Hi, Alana. Hi, Mindy. Hi, Jessica. Hi, Elaine. I know we're on an off day today, so hopefully a lot of us will still be able to join. There are a lot of Jewish holidays in September, and every year it throws my whole schedule off. Hi, Alicia. Hi, Rebecca. Hi, Linda. All right, well, let's get started. We've got a lot to cover today. Let me get my notes up. Okay. So today we're gonna dive into part two of our Creating Awareness module. Last session, we looked at reflecting the truth. And today we're gonna go into, we looked at reflecting the truth. We looked at some consulting or facting, giving people facts that they don't have. And today we're gonna look at the really important skills of acknowledging and celebrating. And those two skills really contain more than meets the eye if you are going to do them really well. So, but before we get to acknowledging and celebrating, there was a piece that there were two pieces we didn't get to in our last class that I wanted to bring forward. The first is, I get this question a lot. Nobody asked it last week, but it might be on some of your minds. This question often comes up of what do you, when you're creating awareness, if you're trying to avoid consulting or facting, what do you do when a client asks you, what do you think? Right? Like, just tell me, what do you think? What should I do? So I'm gonna pose it to all of you. What do you do when a client asks you what do you think? When there's awareness for them to be created, that they can maybe they maybe have the answer. It's not a consulting question.
Could I ask you to ask that question one more time? I was just able to get in. Thank you.
Yeah, what do you do when a client asks you to tell them what do you think about a situation? Can share in the chat or voice to voice. So Lauren's saying, what is your sense of what you might do? Yeah, ask the question back. Simona, to return the question back to them. Yeah, ask them what they feel. So it's like, it's always nice when someone's like, well, what do you think? Right? Back to energy follows energy, creating the container, understanding that our clients are whole and complete. They have their answers, right? We don't want to jump on that right away unless we know that we have a piece of information because of our expertise, like our, you know, it's a consulting thing that the client doesn't have. Or like Cindy's also, what is your knowing? Sometimes I'll just, as so many of you have shared, I'll just ask straight up, I'll ask a question back. Other times I might use like a little bit of a softer approach. Like I might say, I'm happy to tell you my answer, but I'm actually wondering first, or I have a sense that you might know best, right? In case the client is like, why isn't she just telling me, right? So there are certain situations where I may soften that. There are other situations where if I sense a client asks that a lot or might be relying on me instead of themselves a lot, where I might ask, why is it important to get my opinion? Or how will my opinion help? Or I might say, my opinion is going to be my truth, but it may not be yours. How will you use my opinion? Right? So different situations will call for different ways of responding, different types of questions, and creating awareness. Sometimes the best and most powerful awareness we can create for a client in that moment is for them to see why they're relying on an outside source instead of their own inner wisdom. Okay. The other piece, before we go into acknowledging, we looked last week at, kind of harder ways of reflecting the truth, or reflecting harder truths, I should say. But there is, of course, another way of creating awareness of reflecting the truth that's not for hard truths, right? We can call it more like simple creating awareness or reflecting, right? So my style of coaching is I do a lot of reflecting back to clients, what I hear. And again, back to what we looked at last week, one of the reasons why I use reflecting a lot is because sometimes, more than sometimes, clients will say something, but they haven't registered what they've said, or they know it on the cognitive level, but there's an opportunity for them to take it in more on the body level or the heart level or the spirit level, and a reflection back can really help with that. So examples of simple reflecting, I hear that, right? I hear that you're ready for a new way of showing up with your team. I hear your deep compassion and your care for your clients. Another phrase for simple reflecting, sounds like your heart isn't in it. It almost sounds as if you're bored with that project. Sounds like you're done with being a doormat. Here's another example of reflecting. As I was listening to you, I got the image of a bird flying free, right? So creating awareness through imagery, through metaphor. Feels like you're bringing heaviness to that conversation that you want to have with your sister. Here's another example. I love how you used the phrase next level. It feels so apt right now. Sometimes reflecting is about sharing how you feel as you hear your client. I got so excited as you were talking about that new program idea. For me personally, I get chills when somebody shares something and it's like, ooh, they hit on something. And I may reflect back, oh, I just got chills when you said that. Or sometimes it can be, I have a hunch that there's a deeper layer here that you haven't tapped into yet. So again, just the simple reflecting back can be such a powerful way to help a client feel seen, heard, loved, to create awareness. Sometimes this simple reflecting can also be really useful if a client has shared a lot of things all at once. Like if they've told a whole story, or they're like, and I feel this and then this, and I, or after they've just said something really, really important, right? So in any one of those situations, what I'll often say is, okay, let's pause here for a moment. This is what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure I'm getting it right. And then I won't reflect everything back. I'll, using my listening skills, I'll reflect back and emphasize the parts that I sense are the most important that want emphasis. I'll use a lot of the client's own language, and I may insert some of my own words or phrases that I think will be poignant for them as well. Reflecting, the other thing just for us to know as practitioners is that when we reflect, what we're doing in essence is mirroring back to the client what they've just shared or what they know. Do not underestimate the power of mirroring. So we all have mirror neurons inside of us. I'm never great at explaining science, but hopefully you'll get this from my rudimentary science. We all have mirror neurons inside of us. And as babies, babies have these mirror neurons too. And so you might have heard, you know, like when you're with a baby, if the baby smiles, smile back at the baby. If the baby grimaces, grimace back at the baby. This creates a sense of self, a sense of validation, a sense of self-trust. Adults need this too, right? So when we mirror back, sometimes it's also about mirroring the same language. Sometimes it's matching the tone of voice that the client just used. Sometimes we want a different tone of voice or a different language as well, right? And then just the other thing I want to say about mirroring is this is just a great tool for enrollment conversations as well. So there have been studies that have been done on sales that show that when a salesperson is in conversation with a prospect, if the prospect leans in and then the salesperson mirrors that and leans in, or if the prospect kind of sits back, you know, gets comfortable, and then the salesperson leans back and gets comfortable, a sale is more likely to happen simply by mirroring, right? So, you know, how we want to think about that in terms of the words we use and reflecting and using those reflections in sales conversations. All right, let me pause here. Anything that wants to be added or shared around mirroring or reflecting, simple reflecting. No? Okay. All right. So, we're going to look today at acknowledging, and we're going to look at two types of acknowledging. The first is what I call honoring what is, and then the second is celebrating. So, what is honoring what is? Honoring, so often in life, we're taught and culture teaches us to not honor what's not so savory, to not honor what's not so great, to not honor, excuse my language, shitty experiences. But that is a really big disservice to us as human beings. Now, that doesn't mean that we should wallow in the not so savory and the not so great and, you know, all of that. But culturally, we don't honor it. And when we don't honor it, that's actually when it festers. That's actually when we don't feel whole and complete. That's actually when it's like, oh, there's something wrong, or that's when we get bypassed, or we bypass ourselves. So I really believe that one of the most sacred jobs that we have as practitioners is to really support our clients, to honor all of who they are and their full experience. When we create a space and an opportunity for clients to honor all of who they are, to honor their full experience, what happens is that the client then feels confirmed and validated in what they're feeling or experiencing. It helps them know that they have a right to feel however they're feeling, that they're not wrong in that. It helps them to know that they're not abnormal for struggling or for experiencing crappy things. It helps the client become aware of, they may not even be aware of, right? Or connect more deeply to what they're really feeling and experiencing. Honoring what is can support a client to accept their situation or themselves, right? And acceptance doesn't mean that we don't work to change it, but it's actually really hard to change something that you don't accept, that you don't have compassion for, that you don't honor. When we support a client to honor what is, we support them to trust themselves more and to feel more nourished. There's lots of different ways we can honor what is with clients, create that awareness, that acknowledgement, right? So here are just some examples. That must have been really frustrating. Right? Before we go to like, oh my God, how are we going to fix this? And let's look at the positive. That must have been really frustrating, or that sounds really tough. I know you worked really hard on that, and it makes perfect sense that you're disappointed. I completely get why you'd be really angry about that. Sometimes just a simple, I'm so sorry to hear that. I feel your sadness with you. I'm sad about that too. Another example, it can be so painful when, right? It can be so painful when we have an employer who doesn't acknowledge our strengths, right? If a client is sharing about that. Sometimes a simple, again, you know, these are all different examples based on context. Right now is a really busy time. You're going through a lot. You've moved beyond that relationship. It makes sense that it's bringing up so many different emotions. That would have surprised me too. I really wanted that for you also. I'm sorry that didn't happen. And so those are just some examples. You know, I think I've shared this before. I always kind of compare coaching to parenting. It's just like a good metaphor for me, you know, and I think so often, like, how would I be a different person if my parents did more, less fixing or blaming or pushing aside and more honoring what is? Okay. When we can honor what is, our client feels seen and heard and loved. and they feel a deeper connection to us. The deeper a connection a client can feel with their practitioner, then the more vulnerability there is in the container. The more vulnerability there is in the container, the more likely a breakthrough is going to happen. Honoring what is allows a client to see what is. And when we can see what is, then we're better equipped to process it. And if we need to take action on it, take action on it. What I have found is that when I acknowledge, you know, by honoring what is, so often I literally, like either literally or metaphorically, a client takes a deep sigh of relief. I'm like, gosh, you know, no more pretending. I can be honest with myself fully here. It can take shame out of feeling what they're feeling. Right. And then, as I mentioned before, honoring what is a tool that helps us. It's kind of a guardrail so that we don't bypass our clients or use toxic positivity. The last thing most, not all, but the last thing most people need when they're feeling grief or disappointment or rage or whatever it is to look at the positive side of things. There is a time and a place for that in the process, for sure. But I can guarantee you, if you try to get there without honoring what is first, it's not going to work. There's going to be a rupture in the container.
Would you say that one more time?
Yeah. When we skip to the, like, let's look at this in a different perspective, or the positivity, or, you know, when we skip to that and we pass over the honoring what is first and give it the space that it needs, it can likely create a rupture in the container. Trust is lost, or vulnerability is lost, or a client will go with it and try to pretend to, like, be ready to look at the solutions or the learning or, you know, whatever it is, when they're not there yet. And then that will kind of stop the process at some point. That makes sense? Yeah. So one way we can think about this is that when we acknowledge by honoring what is, one of the things that we're doing is providing empowered compassion. Empowered compassion. Sometimes clients need empowered compassion way more than what we think of traditionally as coaching, you know, rooting them on, strategizing, asking the smartest questions. I, obviously, all of those are very good things too, but I always coach the what based on the who. Sometimes what's needed is that empowered compassion. And I use or created the phrase empowered compassion very intentionally and purposefully, because when we're honoring what is, when we're providing empowered compassion, what we're actually doing is holding this balance between honoring what is, as well as holding a client in their strength and in their possibility versus pitying, right? So we can honor what is by pitying. That's not really honoring what is, right? Or seeing something as a pathology or a wounding versus also holding the strength. Honoring what is not done right, can create a sense of there's a brokenness here, right? That's not what honoring what is. It's empowered compassion. All right, let me pause on this. What feels important here? Oh, I'll give, sorry, one more piece and then I'll ask. And the other piece that's related to all of this, I heard this once many, many years ago. And I love this phrase. Coaching is love in action in a professional setting. I'll put that in the chat. Coaching is love in action in a professional setting. All right. What's coming through? What are you seeing? What do you want to add? What feels important? Jamie.
Yeah, the thing that kind of popped up for me in all of this, you know, the honoring what is everything that the client has brought that is a breakthrough that is not done yet, right? I mean, it's instead of the focus on what's wrong by trying to move it forward is, you know, like the real honoring is, well, many honorings, everything you spoke to, but also this other piece of you're here telling me this, I'm getting goosebumps because of all the work you've done. And all the breakthroughs you've had, even though it doesn't feel like it's complete yet.
Yeah, 100%. And that gets into celebrating territory, and we're getting there today. So I'm so glad you're like, yes, that is a piece of this 100%. To acknowledge, also acknowledging and honoring what is like, these are the breakthroughs. This is what has happened. Good. What else are you seeing? What feels important? What else do you want to add?
I apologize. I can't raise my hand on my app, so I just say, hey.
All good.
So ironically, it makes me so happy to talk about toxic positivity, because I just find this world happy obsessed. You know, like, oh, let's just brighten things all the time. And it's like, whoa, this human experience is complex. And it is not bright all the time. And it is such a disservice and a dismemberment of self to really take away my human experience. And so I just love that you highlighted that. I was sitting here like clapping inside over toxic positivity, because it's just such an important component to highlight. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah, and so well said. And that when you use the word dismember, that really hit me. I think that's so true. And again, back to energy follows energy. If we as practitioners are like, everything is positive and rosy and all the things, well, that's not real life. And so inevitably, when that doesn't always turn out true for the client, that's going to cause even more pain or, you know, self-sabotage or whatever, because they're going to think there's something wrong with them for it not being happy and rosy all the time. Mindy.
One of the things, again, I love that you brought up the toxic positivity, and I love the term happy obsessed, because I think that's true. But one of the things that's most striking to me when I'm working with people is for some people, they've never had that opportunity to actually just say exactly what they're feeling and someone to acknowledge it. And like you said, just how powerful that is. To not have it, you know, swiped away and say, oh, don't worry about it, it's not real. I mean, that's like, for me, that's like the reflecting piece. It's so huge and it's so simple.
Right. It is so simple. It plays into that mirroring neuron piece that we were talking about. Yes, 100%. And you're right. So many people have not had the opportunity to just be in their anger.
Yeah.
Be in their disappointment. Whatever it is such a sacred act to create a container for that, just that, for clients, and to honor that. Good. Tiffany.
So I'm very much with you, and I appreciate the terminology, toxic happiness, et cetera. And maybe this is not the time or place for this question. I am wondering about the other side of when somebody is really seems to be only able to see all the air in the glass as opposed to any water. And I trust me, I am not a lily sunshine kind of gal. I'm just not. But also, I struggle in those conversations. I do.
Yeah, 100%. It's such a good question. And I can't answer all of it now because some of it is going to relate. For example, a resistance archetype, one of the resistance archetypes is the victim or the catastrophic one or the judge. So it may be that it's a resistance archetype one. We'll get to that soon. It might be that there's a fear around seeing the positive, like, you know, in Jewish tradition, it's like, you know, if you say anything good, you have to like spit poo without an evil eye, you know, it's like, right? So there can be like these embedded fears around seeing what's right and what's positive. When we get to celebrations, I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So there's, you know, there's some rewiring, you know, we'll get to lots of different ways. I always say at the beginning of this program, like, I wish I could just like download all the information all at once, but it's a time lapse. So we'll get there. Okay. So let's look at some inner pieces around this for us as practitioners. Because energetics, when we're honoring what is, are so key, our energetics as practitioners. So just to explore for yourself for a moment, on a scale of 1 to 10, how comfortable are you with holding space for another person's pain, grief, disappointment, anger? How comfortable are you? And no matter where you're at on that scale, when you think about holding space for another person's pain or grief or disappointment, anger, et cetera, what might scare or trigger you about that? Next question. This is like kind of a little bit of a body exploration. What does it feel like in your body for you to optimally hold space for, excuse my language, for shitty things for another person? If you're holding space for not so great things, how does that feel in your body in an optimal way? You may want to close your eyes if that's comfortable, but just like explore that inside of yourself for a moment, what that feels like energetically to hold uncomfortable space. And then last question, where are you in your own evolution in holding yourself both in the shitty things and in your strength all at once? Where would you put yourself on that scale of holding, honoring what is and the strength, your strength or your possibility and opportunity all at once?
Joanna, could you repeat that one, please?
Yeah, that wasn't a well-articulated question. When you think about yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at honoring what is in your own life while really holding your strengths and your resources and your possibilities at the same time. All right, let's pause here. What are you seeing? What's coming through? What feels important?
Joanna, I'd like to maybe get your insights on this as it relates to that second question about what might scare or trigger me. And this might not be so much from a coaching perspective, but I also see that there's so much overlap in a life experience that someone personally in my life may be having, and sometimes that a client could be having as well. And so I immediately wrote down, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable and can remain pretty calm in situations that perhaps some may deem extreme, with some things that I've experienced and have walked clients through essentially and have been present to and for, both in real time and after the fact. And now with a much more of this trauma-informed response, I wrote down, what scares or may trigger me might be my own delayed trauma response as a result of navigating through something that perhaps would be deemed pretty traumatic with someone. Does that make sense? And I know I'm not giving a specific example because I just want to be aware that that might be touchy for folks.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat back what I think you're asking, and because it may not be, so tell me, but I think what you're asking is, what if whatever you're working on with a client, whatever it is that you have that kind of activates a traumatic response in you?
And I think what I said was it feels like it's a delayed response, like not in the moment per se, right?
But then it's in the moment you can hold the space.
And yes. Then, yes. Yeah. And then a couple days or, later, it's like, holy crap. Ooh, that was a lot. And somewhat similarly to what you asked me last week is, where's my support? Where's our support as practitioners?
Yeah.
When we are also perhaps navigating so much with one or perhaps several clients simultaneously. Right. And I'm sure you know this.
Right. We're in it with them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's such a great question. So there are a couple of pieces here. So first of all, just the fact that you're asking the question says you have this awareness that this can happen, right? So you want to watch for it. You want to do things preemptively and then do things if it does happen, as it happens, kind of as a response. So preemptively and as a response. So the first piece is this. And I know I'm about to make a really strong statement, and there's no perfection in this. And feel free, this isn't the truth with a capital T. Feel free, anyone, to disagree. We can be our best as practitioners. I'm not saying this the right way. The more we take care of ourselves, the better practitioners we are. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be brilliant, not take care of yourself and still be brilliant with a client, but over time, it's going to eat away. And when I say take care of ourselves, there are different levels to that. We have containers with our clients. We've learned about that, right? But our bodies are our container. And we also want to take care of our container, right? So there's the actual physical taking care of ourselves. Sleep, some of us, we're all on a spectrum with sleep, right? But like, you know, sleep, eating, practices for our nervous system. So I know because I'm a coach, because I work with groups, because I'm holding so much energy a lot, like a lot of the time, I have regular practices for taking care of my body and my nervous system. Again, like, you know, my supplements, you know, I'm very particular about the food that I eat. I'm a big fan of listening to binaural beats at the end of the day. I get acupuncture. I have an acupuncturist in the house, my husband. I get acupuncture regularly. I get craniosacral regularly. I try to get massage, right? So I'm taking care of my body and my nervous system for myself, but really for my clients. I'm taking care of my soul and my mental health. And that's why, you know, in this program, I also ask a lot of inner questions for us. It's not just for our techniques. You know, I'm constantly working on the different parts of myself, on my own fears, on, you know, working through my own old traumas. Sometimes, a lot of the time, do that with myself. I've learned how to hold, just because of my work, like hold containers for myself in that. But I also have other support with that too, as needed. So I know this is nothing that we don't know, but I think it's important to make that point, right? Like we want to be, to whatever capacity we have, time, resources, we want to be taking care of ourselves. And then even when we do that, every now and again, as you're saying, Rana, like something will hit us afterwards, or just the buildup of it, right? Like we're not perfect human beings, we're not robots. So to be aware of it, right? To know when we are going into dysregulation in a bigger way than normal, because we're all dysregulated all the time these days. But you know, and then to get the support there to work a little bit more intensely on it. Mindy's asking in the chat, does compartmentalizing come into play here? Yeah, that's such a great question. I'm glad you're bringing that forward. I always like to say I have learned, because of my family history, because of my mother being so ill for so many years and being in emergency rooms and emergency situations more than I care to count, I have learned really well the skill of compartmentalizing. I've needed it for survival. You know, and we're all on a spectrum of that. But you know, absolutely. And I think you wouldn't be in this program if you weren't a human being that knows intuitively how to hold space for someone else and put a little bit of your own stuff in the background to work on later, if that's what's appropriate in that moment. Does that answer your question, Rana?
It's what you've offered is extremely familiar to hear. It's helpful to hear it again. Yeah. And I think just in particular, things I'm navigating right now, you know, in my life and with clients and so on, it was necessary to hear this again. And one thing that you also mentioned, Joanna, was you mentioned, and I'll listen to the replay on it so I catch it again, but it was something along the lines of, I don't want to misquote you, so if somebody else here caught it and can help me out, I'd appreciate it. The piece about, you know, coming from the wounded place and not pitying, and yet, you know, from that trauma-informed perspective, the wounds are real.
Right. So it's not, there's a difference between there are wounds that mm-hmm. you are experiencing
right.
versus you are wounded.
I hear you.
Yeah. And okay. So it's the difference between this is not the whole, you are whole and complete, and you're experiencing this wound, this rupture, this fear, this trauma, et cetera. It's that, that's what I mean by whole, honoring both.
It'll be helpful for me to hear some of this again. So I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks, yeah. Joanna.
Great questions. Carlita.
I liked that question about how good am I at honoring what is in my own life while honoring my own strength and resources and possibilities at the same time. Because I feel like I've been recently in this journey as a business person, especially with just being like, how do I be real with like the fact that I'm still very much in my own journey and don't have everything figured out and still feel like, you know, I'm very much in the middle of it in a lot of ways, in a way that like, I don't want for my business to depend on me having some image. I don't want to sustain that image. I don't want to be censoring the truth about my own life and experience. And at the same time, when I present what I'm really going through, I don't want to present it in a way that like diminishes me somehow or lessens my own actual wisdom and strength and resources. Just like, you know, I'm experiencing this and not saying like, oh, I'm ashamed for like, oh shit, I'm going through this thing, but like just really being with like, yeah, you know, this is my life and this is what I'm here, and trusting that like the people who are resonant to me will love that, you know. And just, it's really, it's a journey that I've been on myself. And then I noticed in my own client, I had a call and I just feel like, I don't know if I'm holding that resonance somehow, but it feels like instead of this pressure to be perfect and like, quote, get it right so much of the time, this pressure has come off and this trust that I am still headed where I'm headed. And I see that capacity opening up in, you know, my client as well. And it's just like, it feels like such a beautiful development to be like truly experiencing ourselves as whole and complete, in that we still have things that we're working with. And we are also still making progress and growing, and not saying I have to be perfect or my goals here will never work out or whatever it needs to be. So it's really feeling like a beautiful thing to be able to hold all of it honestly and openly in myself and in how I share with others all at once. I'm loving that. It's a big relief.
Yeah, I'm so happy to hear it. And I very intentionally share my struggles and, you know, the places where I get stuck and, you know, all of that, right? But I don't share it in a like, woe is me, pity myself way, right? I share it also like with the strength intact. I do that as a model for others to normalize crappy things, you know, and that it's all good. But I also do it for myself, because when I share in that way, then I embody the holding both even more. And it's empowering, you know, it takes the shame out. Good. Rebecca.
Hi. I have a piece that's related to what Rana was sharing, which is, when it comes to honoring what is, when your client is processing a trauma, sharing about a trauma, or in a trauma response, I'm curious about that. Like, I feel confident holding the space. There's something about verbalizing that feels more nuanced to me. And my question is, you know, a lot of the ways that we were talking about this was to be specific, to mirror. And I was curious, when you're looking at trauma, if you approach it differently.
That's a great question that I may not be able to fully answer. I'm going to try my best, but the reason why I don't know if I can fully answer is because I do, like, in terms of the difference between the scope. Okay, so we're all walking around traumatized just from the world these days and all of the things. And I feel like there's certain traumas that are within the scope of coaching, like to process. And then there are certain ones that are with outside of the scope of coaching, if it's the first time speaking to it or processing it. And that's going to depend on the person, you know, always coach the what, based on the who, et cetera. But that being said, you know, I think that it's so much of it is deep listening and listening into like how does this person want to be held? You know, what is the energy that is going to be most regulating here for this client? And sometimes also asking, you know, what is it that you need here? You know, I'm giving generalizations because every situation is so, you know, specific to the person. And if you have a particular situation, we can kind of pick that apart. But what I'd say is what's most important is to be like, to have that trauma-informed approach, right? To understand that this isn't like a throwaway thing, that I'm not going to be cavalier here, that, you know, that this person is sharing and the share might come from a place of trauma. So how am I holding this? How can I be intentional here? I'm not going to push. I'm not going to, you know, all of those different pieces. So that, let me know if that makes sense and answers your question.
It does. And and it doesn't, right? Like it's one of those things that like, when it came up, my sense about it was that it just needed to be shared and brought into the space, and that sometimes honoring it is just maybe saying, I hear you and I see you in what you're bringing into this space, and how, if you can articulate a way that I can support you in this, I'm here to do that.
100%. And I was just going to use that phrase, I hear you, right? So sometimes it is, I hear you, I see you, you know, and then backing it up with a question, like you said, you know, a question I might ask is, what do you sense you need here? What would you like to receive here? Or how can I support you in this? Or what is it that you need from me in this?
And yeah, that answers the question, which is, does it need to be specific? And the answer is no, not especially. And my sense is, like, you were talking about containment and stepping back for, you know, like what Rana was describing, which is I hold the space. And then a couple of days later, some stuff comes up, right? It's trusting that our intuition in the moment is going to help guide us. Yeah. So thank you. That, yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome. Tiffany.
Wow. Menopausal. I'll come back.
Okay. I've had those moments too. What was I about to say? Okay. So Rebecca's question is a nice kind of segue into just the last piece I wanted to share about honoring what is that, you know, each situation calls for its own energy, for its own style, that, you know, and again, using your deep listening skills, you'll have a sense, right? Sometimes it is with, you know, just with seriousness. Sometimes honoring what is, you know, I'll respond with seriousness, but a tinge of playfulness around it. So you want to think about, are you always, and particularly with this situation, what's the energy that is required here? What's the energy that's going to be most supportive? It's about the words. It's about the energy, it's about your tone of voice, et cetera. Sometimes if it's something big, you wanna honor, when I say big, I'll give an example of what I mean by that. like the client has just, they've shared something that maybe they've never even shared with themselves before, or maybe it was kind of a situation that happened that was really big and disappointing, whatever it is. Sometimes I'll take an intentional pause first before I honor what is. I'll let whatever the client just said land in the container in their body. And then after that pause, then I'll reflect back. If you're working on video where you can see your client, how are you, what's your facial expression? How are you looking at them? What's even the energy of, you know, just how you are being, right? Your face, your being as you honor what is. All right, Tiffany, you remembered your question.
It was about the nuance of what Carlita was mentioning, you know, sharing from my truth as well. And yet I'm really hesitant. This is a big issue for me, like not being just girlfriend conversation. And I don't mean that in the casual side, but even in the heartful sharing, I feel like it's not a boundary issue, but it's like a professionalism issue for me or something like that. And I feel like I'm much better, frankly, at the friend conversation, because we can amble all through it together. And I am not as great in the coaching conversation. So the conversationality of sharing too much is confusing to me. And maybe you already addressed that last week.
Yeah, we were talking about sharing personal stories last week, which is a great tool for creating awareness. And some of the things that I was sharing is before you share a personal story, you kind of want to ask yourself real quick a couple of questions, like, what is the purpose of me sharing the story? What is the awareness that I'm looking to create, or what is the possibility of, you know, awareness that can be created? What are the details, the bare detail that need to be shared? You know, everything else doesn't, you know, to help create awareness, or in this case, acknowledge, right? Support that acknowledgement, that creating awareness that way. So if you're asking yourself those questions, it will help take it out. I mean, I need to say casual because coaching conversations can be casual, but it will, there's a purpose to it versus it kind of going all over the place. Okay. Okay, we're going to move on to looking at celebrating. Anything else that wants to be shared around honoring what is before we do? Nope. Okay. So the other form of acknowledging is to celebrate, to champion, to cheer on. And we want to do a lot of celebrating with clients. We want to celebrate their wins, not just big wins, small wins too, because those often get overlooked, but they're important, not just outer wins, but inner wins, inner progress as well. Amazing things that happen in their lives. Forward movement. We want to celebrate reaching goals. We want to celebrate resources and skills and talents that our clients have. We want to celebrate even like just the beginning of a win, a decision to go for something that's stretchy, you know, that they've been holding off on for a while. I believe that celebrating it, all of these are so important, but it's another one of the most important skills that we can have. Celebrating is what part of what supports our clients to reach their goals. The reason being is that most of the time, success and successful actions stem from what's working and what's going well, not from what's going wrong. Sometimes success can stem from fear, but we don't want to be like supporting our clients to move forward because they're motivated by fear. Having a strong foundation and seeing your strong foundation and seeing the resources and seeing the wins is what motivates the next win and what motivates the next win and what motivates the next win. Leveraging assets can be way more powerful than fixing deficiencies. Leveraging assets can be way more important or powerful than fixing deficiencies. But the only way that we can leverage assets is to be aware of them first, is to acknowledge them first. When we celebrate with clients, we can support fostering confidence, self-love, self-compassion, hope, satisfaction. Satisfaction is a biggie. For those of you that have been through Sacred Rhythms with me, this relates to the harvest, right? We are, as a culture, not in the practice of seeing what has worked and what we've accomplished, and instead only seeing what hasn't worked and hasn't been accomplished. That is a surefire way to lose steam. When we celebrate with our clients, it supports them in feeling seen and heard and loved and respected. And I really believe that one of our jobs as practitioners is not only to celebrate, you know, as things come up with clients, but to use the container that we have with our client to support them to internalize the skill of celebration, to help them build that muscle so that they do it more and more for themselves. So it sounds easy enough, like, yeah, we're going to celebrate, rah-rah. But the truth is that a lot of people, you may be one of them, have a lot of trouble celebrating themselves and their experiences and their lives. And that's precisely why this is such an important skill for us as practitioners, because a lot of people have trouble doing it on their own. Even if they have a celebration practice, I know that's very popular, you know, like, it, like, to truly deeply on the four levels of learning and processing, like, really embody acknowledging yourself, it's a whole other story. And as practitioners, we want to understand some of the human nature behind celebrating. That will really help us so much. Because if we just go rah-rah and celebrate without kind of understanding human behavior around it, the celebration can end up shutting the client down or pissing them off or having them lose trust in you or having them agree, you know, outwardly, but like silently not really take it seriously. Do you know what I mean?
Can you say that again, Joanna? Can you say that again?
Yep. There are certain situations where, like, we want to understand the human behavior behind celebrating because people have trouble celebrating. And if we, like, excuse, I'm using a lot of bad language in this class, so I'm sorry. Excuse me, but if we blow sunshine up their ass, we run the risk of shutting them down, pissing them off, having them lose trust in us, or it's like we think they're celebrating with us, but like what's happening internally is they're just like not with us anymore. That makes sense? All right, so why do humans have trouble celebrating sometimes? Well, as I said earlier, just culturally, we tend to focus on the negative and what isn't working. That can be from family, lineage, stories, et cetera. For some people, they literally get an icky feeling when they're being acknowledged. It's like, don't see me, it's not true. Or maybe, you know, if you believe this now, then I'm gonna like ruin your expectation of me, I'll look like a fraud, right? And it's almost like this visceral, like, don't see me, that's not, you know, kind of feeling. Some people have trouble celebrating because they don't want to set themselves up to be hopeful about the future and then fail. Some people have trouble celebrating because we were taught that it's obnoxious to think highly of ourselves and our accomplishments. I mentioned the evil eye before. Some people have trouble celebrating because of the evil eye, right? If I like say this was good, everything's gonna fall apart tomorrow. Sometimes people have trouble celebrating because they actually don't, I don't wanna say this, they don't really think that it's that good. Like, oh, the coach is like celebrating my compassion. Like, that's not like, that's not something to celebrate, right? And then part of what fits in a little bit to that icky feeling when we're being not acknowledged, sometimes that can come from, like, we haven't really learned how to receive and take something in, like take in goodness for ourselves. So we want to be aware of all of this as we acknowledge celebrations. That doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge, you know, we don't celebrate with our clients, but we want to be aware of all of this. And we'll get to some hows in a little bit, but first a little bit of inner work around this, because to be able really to celebrate another individual, the more comfortable we can be with our celebrating ourselves, the more comfortable we can be celebrating others. So let me ask you, how and how often were you honored and celebrated by your family of origin? All right, next thing to think about. So when you were celebrated by your family of origin, what was the motivation? Was their motivation to be truly supportive of you? Was the motivation, for example, to pretend that everything was okay when really it wasn't? Was the celebrating you, was the motivation there pressure for you to continue to perform well? Was it to compare you to siblings or others in your family or something else? So when you were celebrated, what was the motivation behind those other people celebrating you? Another way of thinking about that question is, what was the spoken or unspoken message behind the ways that you were celebrated or not celebrated? Couple of other questions. How did your parents or any other role models celebrate or not celebrate themselves and their accomplishments? How did parents or other role models celebrate or not celebrate themselves and their accomplishments? And then last question for now. How did role models or authority figures respond to you if you celebrated yourself in the past or even in the present, or anyone around you really, right? How, whatever is formative for you or is important for you, how do people respond when you celebrate yourself? When you were growing up, for example, were people happy when you acknowledged yourself? Or did they somehow communicate to you that you were getting too big for your britches? Were they scared that you might jinx yourself or something else? What was the response or the reaction when you celebrated yourself? All right, what's coming through here? What are you seeing that feels important? Anyone want to share?
Molly.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was definitely a method of manipulation in my family. So that's how they got us to comply and basically bow down to whatever they wanted us to do, was by using celebration or punishment.
Yeah. I'm sorry that, you know, is what it is. And I'm glad that you're bringing it forward, not just for your awareness, in case you hadn't been aware before, but this is great just to know for clients too, right? And for us as practitioners. So for example, if a client has had that experience, they may react to us celebrating them, you know, in a way that is not optimal, for example, right? And then that would be a place to open up and look at, right? And also, if you've had an experience like that, do you hold back on celebrating with clients for the fear of manipulating, right? Not saying that you do, but something to be aware of and look at. Good. Lots of celebrating selflessness, Rebecca is saying in the chat, a biggie. I was very much steeped in not being the one to celebrate myself. Yeah. Jessica is saying my outward behavior was celebrated, but not who I genuinely was. I knew the celebration as a reinforcement of the good behavior, right? So again, all of these, it's good for just our own awareness as human beings, and then for our awareness in terms of how we approach celebrating with clients, and our awareness just around all the different things that might be going on for a client when we celebrate with them. Amy Jo.
Hi, I noticed a lot of things come up around this exercise, and a lot of it's also being reflected here in the chat. We didn't celebrate in my family wins, I don't think at all. And I also found memories that even extracurricular activities that I was involved in with dance and, you know, different things, student government, it was never celebrated. And so I think that I have sort of a hesitancy in myself to celebrate with clients. It feels like it's out of line somehow. I don't really have the words for it, but it feels like it's too much to go there with people.
Yeah, I'm so glad that's coming up, right? That's so important for you to be aware of as a practitioner, right? Because of just not having this experience of celebrating, that it feels like too much, right? It's almost, tell me if I'm getting this right, like this belief baked in there, you know, if I celebrate, it will be too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also that it's not humble, I guess, is kind of the essence of it, growing up in a very religious family. And I did notice that the very few times that I was celebrated, or even my siblings were celebrated, it had something to do with the religion, with some kind of practice inside of that, that would relate to it. So that seems like that was the only time that we really were acknowledged, and anything outside of that wasn't. And yeah. So there's like a real, like a lot of layers in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it feels like there are definitely places for you to continue to unpack and look at. Yeah. And then just from what you're seeing so far, what feels important to you in terms of like what perspective or belief do you want to bring to your client work when it comes to celebrating based on everything that you're seeing?
I think first, like you said, there's a lot of unpacking before I could even get to it. But what feels important is to allow anything in life to be celebrated, and to understand that it is part of the growth and development, that it isn't actually detrimental to go in that direction, but it is actually part of growth.
That right there feels like has the possibility of being game changing, not just for you as a practitioner, but for you as a human.
Yeah.
So as you do the work of unpacking, if it feels right, the other invitation I want to give you is to consciously and intentionally celebrate, either as you go through your day or at the end of the day. It might feel uncomfortable, and that's okay. That creates growth and resilience to go through the discomfort. And you'll see like how fast or slow you want to take it with clients. You might just want to like jump right in and practice celebrating with clients. But if that feels like not yet, then what I do want to invite you to do, tell me if you feel this would be helpful or valuable, is after a client session, this can be just for you. I want you to name 1, 2, 3 things that you would have liked to have celebrated that client. Cool.
Yeah, I like the practice of doing it after when you started talking about celebrating myself more, I felt my whole body just got hot and I started sweating. So there's definitely something there to work on. But I really do like that, you know, stepping into it gently as a practice for myself, and then maybe potentially growing it into people around me and my clients.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And who's your coaching partner? I can't remember.
Holly.
Holly is. Okay, great. So mm-hmm. only if this feels right for you, Amy Jo, and I'll let you and Holly speak to it. But in your next session, if it's okay with you, Amy Jo, that might be a safer place to practice. Maybe Holly can just prompt you to celebrate her for something. It can be after the session, right? Like what? So you can kind of just practice being in that space too.
Yeah, I like that. Feel safe.
Beautiful. Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Holly.
So I wanted to talk a minute about, because there's an element that I feel is kind of missing for me here, and that's the difference between praise and recognition. Because like coming from a parenting coach perspective, like I read the book Punished by Reward by Alfie Kohn, and coming from my background of being manipulated by praise, like it's so different to me to be in the moment with the client or even prompt a recognition, like let's slow down a minute and recognize how big this is for you. Like it might seem small, but that it's big for you. And that's very different than, hey, good job, or I want to commend you, or I want to applaud you, which is this outside validation that can feel manipulative and icky.
100%. I'm so glad you're bringing that into the conversation. And it's such a great distinction between praise and acknowledgement as celebration. And that is exactly it, is like the celebration is an acknowledgement. It's not what, as soon as there's praise, it also unlevels the playing field in a way, right? So keeping that playing field level is more of that acknowledgement versus the praise. Thank you. Okay. So a couple, Cindy, you want to go ahead?
Just one thing I'd like to share that helped me to receive praise is I did some training with Jack Canfield in self-esteem and peak performance. And they'd make us stand up in front of the class and they would clap for us and to acknowledge us. And just, but the goal was to receive it, and how uncomfortable that was to receive it, and what a big growth it is to be able to receive acknowledgement, receive letting our clients know that they've accomplished something. Because just like Holly was saying, they want to keep going and talking, and then by slowing down and just saying, here's the things I'm hearing that you've just done, can you receive it? So, you know, I think that's more of something in the 90s where they, you know, we're doing this massive clapping.
Right. And yeah. And like I've been in those rooms too, and have in the past done so. And I think that does have its place. I'm glad you're bringing it forward. Like, I think it does have its place, but also to be aware, like, in this, I don't want to call it, I don't know if it has to do with trauma, so this trauma-informed way, but just these discomforts, like sometimes it can be too much for someone to receive that too. So yes, I've certainly, like, I think it's, can be amazing. And also as practitioners, we want to be watching, if we do an exercise like that, what is the response there as well?
Yeah, that was done in a group. You know, what I'm finding with coaching, what I've learned from here, is that after a session, to send back an email and say, these are the three things I want to acknowledge you that you're growing with, because they're so focused on going forward, they forget about what they've just accomplished. And that's been successful. And then to the next session, come back and go back to that. Let's take a moment and really feel that and honor that.
Yes. And I love what you're sharing there. And that's a tool that I often use too. Like if I've acknowledged something and I feel like, oh, there's discomfort in taking it in, or like the client just needs a little bit more encouragement to take it in, I'll say, can you take that in? Can you let that land? How does it feel to take that in? And then that might open up a discussion about the discomfort. So yes to all of that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Beautiful. Yeah. And Tiffany's saying she's done workshops where we said out loud to da when it, yes. Tiffany, I feel like you've also been in the room with me where we've done some of the clapping stuff too. Okay. We have just a few minutes left. So a couple things, last pieces, kind of random, but put it all together. I like to ask for celebrations and prep forms. What are you celebrating since we last spoke? Because we want to kind of build this muscle too of like, this is part of the process. We're acknowledging what is working well. We're acknowledging what our resources are, what our talents are, and we're using and leveraging that to move forward. If a client has shared with me over email about something awesome that's happened, in between sessions, I may at the beginning of the session just pick up on that before I even ask for what are your intentions. I might be like, even though I've responded to the email, I might say like, I just, we emailed about this, but I also voice to voice just want us to have a moment to really celebrate or to really acknowledge, that X happened or that you were able to do Y. To just take that moment can be really meaningful. I'm just noticing in the chat, Karen is bringing up that I've heard of that before too, the Mama Gina, I brag, which is great. Obviously, as it comes up in sessions, to acknowledge. Sometimes when I'm working with a client at the beginning of a new project or beginning of something big that we're going to strategize out or look at, sometimes I like to begin the project by us identifying and listing out assets that the client already has that they can kind of stand on as that strong foundation for moving forward. This is a part of celebration acknowledgement that I think is important. It's I make it a point, not just in words, but in my energy, to let my clients know in different ways that I respect them, that I honor them, that I admire them, that I see them as a being of value. And that is just in like baked in to everything. That is the big celebration baked into everything. We spoke about this already. We don't wanna blow sunshine up. Any like too much of that, the client will smell it right away. Sometimes we do need a cheering session. We do need encouragement, but we want to really, everybody is different. Every situation is different. It wants to be, in that aligned way. Sometimes simple congratulations is all that's needed. Anything else we didn't get to? Oh, sometimes I have, with clients that persistently kind of have that trouble taking it in, I'll name that, right? It's something that we've spoken about. And then when I go to acknowledge them for something, I might say, I know that sometimes you have some trouble honoring yourself or celebrating yourself. And so I want to share this reflection and see if you can take it in, see, how it feels. Sometimes asking a client to put a hand on their heart and to take in can also help with that. Okay. So we've got just half a minute left. If you can hang on, I'd love to hear takeaways and questions, but if you have to go, you'll have a worksheet and resource sheet to work on in your practice session. If you have a practice partner, continue practicing reflecting hard truths, practice honoring what is, practice celebrating, and then talk about it afterwards. And then if you're working with clients already, I also want to invite you to list out for each client one or two things that you sense they could better own or celebrate inside of themselves. So do it for yourself and then consider bringing it to the next session. And our next session, we'll do some practicing with all of them. So before we wrap for today, any last words or questions, anything that wants to be shared or said? Nope. All right. Thank you all of you for your presence and your energy and all the wisdom that you bring and all of who you are. I'll see you soon.